Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
Thank you guys for tuning in, watching, listening, and sharing the podcast. John Haller is our guest today. I want to direct you to his YouTube channel, Fellowship Bible Chapel on YouTube. He does just amazing work. He keeps up with so much that I can't keep up with. So I really appreciate his just research. And like I always kind of, you know, joke around, he reads the New York Times, so we don't have to. I'm kind of kidding, but half serious. But we're going to attempt to talk about the Board of Peace, Iran, Turkey, Syria, and maybe Minnesota. And we'll see. We'll see what we get to today. John Haller, as always, there's really not much to talk about. I don't know how we're going to fill up the time. Good to see you, brother.
We'll be struggling to get through this one.
As always, it's just, it's fun, chaotic, frustrating. Hopefully equipping some people just with how to look at these things that are going on in the world. The chaos is by design. Where would you like to start, sir?
Well, I think the one thing that's sort of at the top, the two areas that are at the top of everybody's mind are, of course, the Middle East and then what's going on here in the United States with, I would only describe as a full-blown insurrection underway.
Yeah, so, and the media will never frame it that way. But yeah, you know, let's start with what's going on in Iran, because at least the media is covering Minnesota, not from a fair and balanced perspective, but at least they're talking about it with the anti-Trump protests and the chaos, the paid protesters and all that. But let's talk about Iran, because just like we mentioned before we got on the air, like Nigeria and the slaughter of Christians there. Where's the media? Where's Black Lives Matter? Where are all these? So Iran, very similar thing happening. The people are being, I mean, what are the numbers now? Between 80 and 100,000 have been killed? Go ahead.
Yeah, it depends on which source you look at. And I do read the New York Times, and did the other day. They actually did. It's actually in the New York Times today, front page, and then two inside pages. Spread about what's going on and what's happened in Iran. And this is a little bit unusual because you can check. I mean, I read Arab press, Turkish press, and places in the UK, like the Times of London, Guardian, Daily Mail, and everything. And it's interesting, in Europe and the Middle East, you're not really finding much in the press about what's going on in Iran. And it's been a virtual bloodbath. So it started the end of December. It's been going on now for pretty intensely since about the 8th or 9th of January. And it's coming out now that on the 8th or 9th of, on those days, in 8th and 9th of January, which was like three weeks ago as we record this, they may have killed 20 to 40,000 people in 2 days. And when you look at protests and things around the world, the level of death that's been caused there far exceeds any other protest and government reaction anywhere in the world for the last 50 years. It's pretty, I mean, it's more than Tiananmen Square in China and elsewhere. I mean, well, you're not old enough to remember, but back in the 50s, there was the protest against the communist government in Eastern Europe, and that resulted in about 3,000 deaths. So multiply that by 10, 15, 20 or more of what happened in just a couple days in Iran. It's been brutal. And unfortunately, I think President Trump may have got out, what do they say in winter around here, out over his skis a little bit, in that he said, well, you know, we support you. You go, help is coming, help is on the way. But here we sit a month later and nothing has really been done in terms of a direct response.
Why do you think that is, John?
Yeah, well, I will say this. It is an incredibly complicated Gordian knot, can of worms, whatever metaphor you want to use. I think that Trump, to his credit, and you could just go launch some bombs in there. So what is that going to solve? Because there's an outflow from it. So look at some of the scenarios that they think is that, okay, we will take out the mullahs, the Iranian religious regime. And if that happens, what's it look like on the other side? What's day one post the Iranian religious regime look like? One scenario would be that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard might be able to take over. That may be even worse because they are they're brutal. I mean, you've seen what happened with the response to the protesters in the streets. So millions of Iranians went out to the streets, but now maybe 100, let's just say 100,000 of them are dead. So there's a lot of death. And it's been brutal. And you look at the pictures that are now coming onto social media, and they shut down the internet completely. So they've put what the Iranian regime wanted to do was put everybody into a digital gulag, which I think is very interesting. And it's not too dissimilar to what they wanted to do to people worldwide during that Charlie Vector 019er thing we had four or five, six years ago. So they're shut everything down, but now pictures are coming out and there's stacks of body bags everywhere. The Iranian regime and some of the people that you see in these pictures, it's brutal to look at. You'll never forget it if you see it. But the bodies have like cardiac patches or IVs in them. Well, no, wait a minute. So did they come to the hospital dead with IVs and cardiac patches in? No, they've been going into the hospital and killing these people. They've been executing people in prison. There's by some estimates, so let's just say there's 80,000 dead, 20,000 imprisoned at least, and over 300,000 injured. That's out of a country of 90 million people. Now, understand that they're facing a relatively formidable force that has weapons. They do not. The protesters do not have weapons. But the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and then one of their militias, the Besiege, have weapons. And those number between the IRGC and the Besiege, close to a million people. So this is not like it's a small police force coming into some place. This is an army that they're facing. So the question is, what happens? So the IRGC could take over, but these guys are hardliners. They're incredibly corrupt. Mm-hmm. They control a lot of money. I think I've said this many times. If you want to understand how Iran operates, watch The Godfather, because it's a crime syndicate. And they parcel off parts of their economy and business and stuff. So the IRGC has theirs, the mullahs, the Khomeini has his, and others have other things that they control. Rafsanjani, who was a president of Iran at one time, he was a Islamic imam, mullah. He controlled, by the time he died, he controlled a fortune of about $25 billion. I mean, that makes him one of the richest people in the world. Khomeini controls at least 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago when they were analyzing it, a fortune of $95 to $100 billion, in a similar amount controlled by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. So the Iranian Revolutionary Guard could step in. By the way, Khomeini has a son who really runs things. Khomeini is 86 years old. He was injured in a terror attack or a bombing or assassination attempt. So he doesn't have use of his right hand, I believe, if you ever watch the videos of him. So his son could take over. Nothing would change. And his son is probably pretty much running everything. His son controls the social media accounts. I follow Khomeini on X and watch his media site, and they post things all the time. So one, Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. Two, the son of the Shah, Pahlavi, could come back and assume power in a constitutional monarchy. But the question is, what's the period of time between the fall of the IRGC and the mullahs and him taking power? That's an unknown. The other thing that could happen, there's two more scenarios. One is, and this has kind of come from some Turkish accounts that have suggested that Turkey might be able, with the backing or blessing of the United States, apparently this has been discussed. Now, I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying that I've verified this completely, that Turkey, which has moved in, I want to talk about that in a minute, moved into Syria, taken over Syria, now going after the Kurds. And now we have the Iraqi government, which sits between Syria and Iran, is having terrible trouble. They're taking out the Kurds. It's terrible what they're doing. And the Kurds helped us fight ISIS. We've pretty much, the United States has pretty much abandoned them. And now the question is, what's going to happen in Iraq? They're very politically unstable. So there's some question as to, a suggestion has been made that the Turks could move into Iraq and then into Iran. And that's very interesting when we talk about Bible prophecy, because that brings to mind the prophecy of Daniel 8. So immediately you're going to get objections. Daniel 8 happened a long time ago. That was Alexander the Great. It all happened. That's fulfilled prophecy. Why are you even worried about that? But Hebrew prophecy has a pattern aspect to it as well. And sometimes these prophecies are fulfilled in sort of like a sequence. They're recapitulated. They happen again. And so when you look at Juwan, and there's the ram goat, it comes from the west against Iran, Persia. Is that on the table? And I think probably more than any time in my life, I've talked about this with people. I say, you're crazy. That could never happen. And right now we're in a situation where it could happen, because right now Turkey is in an incredible ascent. And I can talk about that in a moment. So that's one. So you have IRGC, you have a new mullah taking over, you have Turkey coming in, and not necessarily imposing everything on them, but doing like the Ottomans did during the Ottoman Empire from 1517 through 1917 for 400 years. Then the other one would be that Iran will descend into a civil war, and we will now have another Syria on our hands. Syria, when the Syrian civil war started in 2011, was a country of 23 million people. Half of the country after the start of that war was killed or displaced. At least a million dead, millions of refugees into Europe, 3 million Syrian refugees in Turkey, a couple million in Jordan, and a million or so in Lebanon, which has really undermined their economies. Now some of them are coming back, but the fact of the matter is, Iran is not 23 million people, it's 90 million people. So you have a country four times the size of Syria going into a civil war. And so that's probably one of the reasons why you see Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Turkey, and other countries say, no, Trump, don't go in, don't attack Iran, don't cause a civil war, because we couldn't handle the refugees. Yeah. So it's an incredibly volatile Gordian knot that we have. Now, I will say this, I'm looking at a CENTCON map about what's happened. The United States has moved a tremendous amount of assets into the region, probably since we went into Afghanistan and Iraq and those wars. There's incredible amounts of naval and air assets poised to strike in Iran. Then the question becomes, what happens if the United States strike Iran? How effective are they going to be? Are you going to end up with one of these four scenarios? The civil war would be a disaster. You're talking, I would just guess, based on the experience in Syria, you're looking at 4 or 5 million people dead.
Wow. And
there's a lot of Christians in Iran. I don't think we understand the scope of this. The other concern is that if Trump and Netanyahu decide that Israel and the United States should attack, what what is going to be the response of Iran? Understand that the Iranian regime and a lot of the IRGC are Twelver Shia, and the government too. They're Twelver Shia believers. In other words, they believe, unlike Christian eschatology, where we think this is what's going to happen and we watch the signs for it to develop, they believe, and they have an eschatology, but they believe we can act on our eschatology and bring about this final conflagration, like an Armageddon on the world, and bring back the Mahdi. Huh. And that belief also carries some weight within in the Turkey Sunni Islam part. So it's very complicated.
Yeah.
Now, I want to move to Syria, if I could, for just a moment.
Well, John, before we do that, we've got to take a very brief pause. Touch on Syria. Maybe I talk about Damascus a little bit when we come back. And we've got to go from the Middle East to maybe Minnesota by the time we're done with the podcast today. But we'll be right back on Worldview Matters. Register now for the Worldview Matters Conference, May 1st and 2nd in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Expert speakers include Alex Newman, Brianna Clausen, Olivier Melnick, Tim Chafee, Mark and Amber Archer, Laura Perry Smaltz, Jake Jacobs, Jay Siegert, Gary Kaw, Scott Shera, and Elijah Abraham. Delta Hotel, Green Bay, May 1st and 2nd. Go to worldviewmattersconference.com. That's worldviewmattersconference.com. So, friends, I want to mention you can also connect with John on Facebook. Just look up John Haller, and you can get a lot of his posts there and keep up with some of the roundtables that he does with some great, great guests. So, John, Damascus is important biblically. And so just touch on that briefly, and we'll try to get to Minnesota, but wherever you want to go now.
Yeah, let's do Damascus. So, in fact, as we record this, this is the one-year anniversary of al-Shara assuming the presidency of Turkey. He was a jihadi. He was imprisoned by the Americans and during the Iraq War. He got out. He became part of the whole al-Qaeda, ISIS thing. And then under the auspices of Turkey, he was able to take over Syria in about 8 days from his base up around Aleppo. This was a stunning operation. In fact, Putin said in his year-end news conference in 2024 after this happened that they took over Damascus, which had 30 to 40,000 Syrian troops guarding it with 800 men. So this is a formidable thing. So he went into the mosque there in Damascus and he assumed the power. So I'll go back to about on the one-year anniversary of the fall of the Damascus regime on December 8th, 2024. On December 8th, 2025, a commentator in Israel on I-24 News named Ruth Wasserman Landy, very intelligent, articulate lady. She's been served in diplomatic corps in Israel, was a member of the Knesset for a time. And she said, we need to realize that there is no longer a Syria. It is a facade. It is controlled by Turkey. And I would agree with her 100%. David Wormser, an analyst, they're both at the Mizgov Institute, and they also serve with some other think tanks. David Wormser, a few weeks ago, in the latter part of December, did an interview on JNS with Dan Diker, and who's with the Jerusalem Center for Foreign Affairs. And he said, listen, what happened on December 8th, 2024 was incredibly significant. This was the first time that Sunni Islam had been in control of Damascus for 1,000 years. So this is incredibly significant stuff that happened back in the latter part of 2024. We're seeing it play out now. And Sunni Islam views Damascus as sort of their geopolitical and religious epicenter. And if you remember Erdogan's son and others, they've done these protests on a bridge in Damascus or in Istanbul saying, yesterday we'll take over Hagia Sophia. They turned it into a mosque 5 years ago, the largest church ever built in the history of Christianity. Then today, Umayyad, Damascus, and tomorrow, Al-Aqsa. So they're making designs on Jerusalem. And so if we think that Isaiah 17 is a future prophecy, it would seem that Damascus will become very important. And now you see Damascus being revived as the center of Sunni Islam right in front of us.
Mm. Wow. There is so much going on, John, and the average person cannot keep up with everything. Nor were we meant to, but it's very interesting because so much of this is prophetic, what we're seeing. Boy, we're already down. We're moving really, really fast here. Do you want to wrap up the Middle East before we go to the other M, Minnesota?
Well, I think it's going to be very volatile. Turkey is in ascent. Erdogan may be running for office this year. There's also some indications that he may not be in the best of health. But, you know, be it as it is made, Turkey is an incredible descent in terms of weapons, technology, drones, drone fighter jets, full-size fighter jets, unmanned fighter jets that are doing things that maybe no other military in the world is doing, at least publicly right now. Hmm. And it appears that they're trying to find oil. So there's going to be a conflict between Somalia and Somaliland. They're moving also into Libya and into Sudan to grab oil assets there. And that's kind of, it's interesting, about 10 years ago, there was an Islamic Turkish holy guy. Everybody thought he was a nut, but he said, if you take over Hagia Sophia, the largest church in Christianity, if you restore Hagia Sophia to Islam, the oil will begin to flow. And so people in Turkey, whether it's true or not, people in Turkey believe that it's true. And I'm telling you, I'm watching these things move around the Middle East, mm. and it's very complicated.
Yeah.
And it's also very much related to Bible prophecies that we see in Ezekiel, Jeremiah, Isaiah, and elsewhere.
Yeah. So speaking of Somalia, let's talk about Minnesota. John, first of all, before we go there, let's state the obvious. You've got that picture. Usually you're in front of Jerusalem with your background there, but that is actually Ohio, which is apparently rare. I was telling John before the podcast, we're in Green Bay, Wisconsin. We don't have any snow. I mean, we haven't gotten snow for like 2 weeks. And look at Ohio. And I don't understand how it all works, but so I'm thankful for that picture because it reminds us it is winter. But John, go ahead. Let's go to Minnesota.
Yeah, we got 21 inches recently, and it's been sub-zero and wind chills below zero. So we're not expecting temperatures above freezing until the middle of February. So this this is unusual. Certainly, it's cutting into my golf time, I will say that.
And this is another reason they went from global warming to climate change.
Yeah, that's right. I would be all for climate change. As I've always said, David, it's never been too hot to play golf, but it's been too cold.
Yeah. So John, really quick.
Let's talk about Minnesota where it is cold.
Something people don't understand is the Trump administration has not deported as many illegals as the other presidents, even Obama and Biden, and people don't understand that. So to see these protests is very interesting. Go ahead.
So the Trump administration has probably deported 10%, 5 to 10% of what prior administrations, Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Biden did. For example, Obama did 12 million. Biden did 10 million. Clinton did 20 million. Trump's done a little over 1 million.
Jeez.
And so this is a planned, coordinated insurrection.
Yep.
And there are a lot of people, James O'Keefe and others, are doing great work out there showing how these are planned events to interfere with ICE officers doing their job. And in some cases, by the way, they're going out to get people who've been convicted of abusing children. And so these knuckleheads on the left are going out there to prevent criminals from being arrested and deported and out of our country. This is a sickness, an insanity, a mental illness. I don't know what you want to call it. It's unbelievable. But they're also doing a number of things. So you're going to see stories a lot. For example, you saw it with, I call him Don Lemon or Don Lamone, whatever he wants to call himself. He was CNN. He was out there when they stormed the church. They went down to a federal magistrate and said, would you sign off on an arrest warrant? And the magistrate judge refused to sign off on it. And you're seeing this happen with judges all over the place, particularly in D.C., Minnesota, and elsewhere, where the Trump administration goes there. I believe there have been in Minnesota 500 habeas corpus petitions. Habeas corpus means produce the body. 500 filed in Minnesota. And they're trying to hold, and a lot of times they will give these statistics. Oh, well, they haven't complied with any of them, but they do the data like within minutes of the order being given. And it's not possible for the government to process it and get the person back. And they had a big hearing in Minnesota, Minneapolis today. They canceled it. And these left-wing woke judges are participating in it. And even now, when you go to people, you present evidence to a grand jury. This is happening in D.C. and elsewhere. These left-wing funded NGOs are training people how to vote against indictments. And so you're seeing, and it used to be when I was in law school, the statement was you could indict a ham sandwich. It was that easy. Mm. Now we have indictment presented to grand juries, and the grand juries are refusing. They're 23 persons, so you got to get a 12-11 vote. They're not getting indictments. It's turning everything. It's completely corrupting and weaponizing and destroying our legal system here in the United States. And this is an insurrection. So
yep.
Trump could bring in the Insurrection Act, I think. But this is a very, very... and this is all to lead up to the midterms coming up in the fall.
Yep, that's part of the reason. And we know the left is showing their true colors. It's not going to be limited just to Minnesota. Mr. John Haller, thank you so much for all you do. We appreciate it, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, David.
God bless you, friends. And as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.